Hello, everyone. This is Zach from the editor's desk. This episode is from back at the beginning of quarantine. So it's been a little bit since we've recorded this episode, but it is a little bit dated when we recorded it. So we will be talking about our quote unquote current situations before we get into the podcast. But like always, this will be a regular talk show, and I hope everybody enjoys. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tabletop Radio Hour, your podcast for everything tabletop. My name is Zach, and this week I've got the regular crew. I've got Mark, and I've got Steve. Mark, how are you today?
I'm doing dandy. How about you?
Just fine. I wanna make some like timely jokes right now, but it's like I know that this episode probably won't be the next one that's uploaded. So
true, and hopefully the world will have changed by the time this airs.
Yes, I'm also feeling a little bit claustrophobic
right now. Oh yeah,
so. All good.
So during time of this recording, we are all currently stuck at home, and everyone knows why, because everyone's most likely stuck at home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just a little bit of background for when we recorded this episode.
Yes.
But anyways, we're going to have a talk show today, and I think we're going to start off with our segment of Session Zero. In Session Zero, we talk about, talk about ideas of a game we might want to play in the future, or maybe not at all, who knows. But it's we just want to talk about some more games a little bit in depth. So I think this week we're gonna work with the Conan game. Mark saw it on his shelf and was like, hey, let's talk about Conan this week.
Yes.
So we're talking about Conan this week. Yeah. Conan is a really interesting IP because it can go kind of hand in hand with some other things, but it is really unique in some sort of ways. So I'm really interested to play it. I personally haven't played it. Have you guys played Conan on your Tuesday night game before?
Yes. Yeah, we've played a few times. We've had got a regular game going.
Done 3 or 4 sessions so far with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Yeah, so you guys have a lot better idea of this than I do from the actual gameplay point of view.
Mm-hmm.
How does it play? This is kind of a small RPG reflection, but I mean, who cares?
Well,
we're just talking about the game.
I think it was the first, or one of the first, of the Modiphius D20 systems.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the foundation that they've used for some of their other games, like Star Trek and John Carter, which we have played more of.
Right.
We have.
And while their D20 system isn't completely interchangeable, it does feel familiar from one to the next. So you're probably about the halfway point if you played any of the others. But you can't just
played several. We've all played several of the others.
Well, yeah. So like if you started playing Conan, you'd be pretty familiar with the basics of it, but there's still enough that's unique to Conan that, you know, you'd want to read up on it beforehand, not just assume that you can kind of show up day one. It's not as universal as some of the other, you know, like Fate, for instance, where you can kind of fudge your way through the rest of it if you needed to.
True.
Exactly.
I think the Conan game is probably the closest to D&D that you might find.
That's fair.
In that, you know, you have the skills with their own value that you roll against. So I think, you know, you can kind of see that this is the first game that kind of evolved from there. And then the other games evolved further away from that. But
yeah.
And because it's a fantasy setting, that's kind of appropriate that it's D&D-ish.
Right. And in going through the rules, too, and maybe, like, stop me if I'm off base on this one, Mark, but it feels like it is kind of structured to kind of set up tiers of players. Like, it's designed to kind of, you've got, like, a starring barbarian that's got, like, the ancient blood and has, like, crazy huge stats. And then if you're trying to be a little bit more generalized, you're kind of heading down more of a supporting character role to it. It didn't feel so much like sort of a party of peers, more as a, you know, like somebody's going to be the star and the rest of the player is going to be, you know, like filling in the gaps that he's missing.
I don't know that that's necessarily true.
Okay.
I think there is a mechanic for if your base attribute is over a certain level, there is a background you take that justifies that as you being having some sort of noble heritage. But I think a lot of that really, you know, just comes down to good gameplay
more than
anything. But yeah, there is that mechanic of having a noble background that does give you those characters a little bit more to play with.
Yeah.
So I've created a character for whatever game, you know. I've just, Mark and I sat down one day and when I just created a character.
Okay.
So I do know the character creation aspect of this. And I can get a general idea of the flavor of how these games would go, which is good.
Tell us about your character.
To be honest, I don't remember, but I'm pretty sure he was more of like a Viking mercenary kind of type.
Okay, that would work.
It's been a minute since we did that.
Well,
I haven't looked at it since.
Okay, that's fine. The reason I'm asking is if I were gonna run the Conan game, I've got kind of some cocktail napkin scratches about doing sort of a gothic-y combat heavy, something that's a little bit darker but also lots of combat. So not quite a dungeon crawl, but more of a, I don't know, I'm looking for a campaign that kind of would look great airbrushed on the side of a van.
Yes.
And I feel like that would be kind of Cronin appropriate. So
especially if you get into the, if I recall on the map, it's the more northern areas where it gets towards that more Scandinavian-ish, you know, countries up there or areas or whatever, whatever way the map is.
Interestingly, that's kind of where Conan is originally from.
Okay.
From that northern territory.
Okay.
I think you were further north than he, but if I remember
a little bit, if I recall, but I could be thinking of something else entirely. I've looked at a lot of rules since then.
Yeah.
That would do well with that feel that you're looking for, I think.
Yeah, anything true. Viking mercenary just pretty much feels like a heavy metal song, and that's sort of what we're aiming for here. So that would totally work. What kind of character do you think you'd want to do, Mark?
When I first read the book, the first thing I gravitated towards was, I kind of did an experimental character that was from Argos, one of the more nautical cities.
And, okay.
One of the neat things with the Conan character generation process is you come up with this whole story of how they got to where they were. And what I created for this guy was that he was a officer on a ship that got involved with some slavery, which he opposed. So he organized a mutiny against the captain and ended up killing his captain, but becoming an outcast of the Argos sea, and has ventured inland to kind of travel you know, to travel and kind of get away from that that kind of background.
Okay.
So, interesting. Yeah. So he's kind of a corsair, but he's kind of traveling the lands that way.
I will say I like how you both immediately went to kind of more like nautically themed, because the what I was thinking of was sort of like an at sea adventure. So if we've got a Viking and someone who at least has a background in the sea, it would make sense that you know, you could come across this haunted island or cursed island and you know, or that could be worked in there. So yeah, it's kind of funny how like all signs point to the North Sea.
Nice. Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, it sounds like it would be a blast and I would enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
As a you know, hacky slashy Viking mercenary. So, yeah, that sounds like it would be very fun.
Yes.
Yeah. So now let's talk about tone for a minute here, because I said kind of darker, but that's not necessarily where it would need to go. When you think of Conan, Zach, what do you think of? Do you think of it as more of like kind of like a Seventh Sea swashbuckly, you know, like lopping off eight heads with every turn? Or do you see it as more of a little bit of a grim, dark sort of the trench stuff from Aquaman?
I kind of a happy medium. It's got its highs and lows, because the thing with Conan is I think it can be that dark, gritty if it wants to, but it doesn't necessarily have to, because it does deal with the nobility side of things a lot.
Okay.
Which it doesn't always necessarily have to be that darker tone.
It doesn't have to, but I think you know, he is an anti-hero. It is,
yeah,
you know,
definitely.
And when you think, it's hard to think Conan without thinking Frank Frazetta. And thinking of those Frank Frazetta paintings, and you know, like you said, the airbrush on the side of a van is
right.
You
know, right. Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's exactly what you kind of go with. And you know, I'm not real good with that dark tone, but I think you're right in that is really the right flavor for this genre.
Okay.
Like dark can also. It doesn't have to mean the same dark that we all think when we say dark. Like this could be like Scandinavia cold of winter situation. That
well,
kind of dark.
That's pretty freaking dark.
Well, I don't think you want to go gothic, you know, World of Darkness, you know, gothy,
no.
Angsty teenage dark.
Certainly
you know?
Not mopey emo dark. No. I don't think anyone wants that for Conan.
Yeah. But but yeah, I think, you know, that they're, well, interestingly, Howard was good friends with, Cthulhu guy. I'm blanking.
Yeah.
His name.
Jesus, I just blanked it out.
yeah.
No, I knew where you were.
Yeah.
The author.
Yeah,
that guy.
The author, yeah. Lovecraft. Thank Lovecraft. You. Jeez.
which is part of what I was thinking of for the campaign. Yeah, you know, I said like it's sort of like darker, like, so it would be not like, you know, great old ones, but certainly like a little touch of Eldritch horror in there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm perfectly
would be kinda
fine
cool.
With that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a real good call.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
Well, now I want to play this game.
Steve went into this situation thinking this is going to be a complete hypothetical.
Yeah.
I'm not going to actually have to run a game or anything.
Yeah. Now I've
and
got...
here he is. He's like, oh, okay, wait a second. No, this is good.
Now I've opened up a Google Doc. Now I've got notes. So this is not good.
I see. Okay.
All right. So I think you know, with that being said, that might be the end of this segment of Session Zero. Now we're on to some main topics now. Who's got topics? Who wants to talk about stuff?
Okay. Actually, this ties in a little bit to our session zero. This was a topic that I found online on Reddit, like most of them. And it said, how do you deal with a player who wants to do more prep than you? So as a game master, you have a player who has done more, you know, more research. And I kind of say this ties in a little bit because I have been running Conan for our Tuesday group. And in our situation, Steve was kind of taking the role of Game Master. But I've, you know, been reading the books. I've read, gone back and read a lot of the original Howard short stories. So, you know, if we did play that out, it might be a situation where I have done more research or more prep than Steve, if we played that out. But have either of you ever experienced a situation like that?
This is pretty rare for me. I had one or two times where I've had a player that kind of exploits out of character knowledge based on background lore, you know, a little bit too much. And in those situations, it was, you know, I'll just say, like, you know, we kind of did some corrective action and moved on. It didn't break a game or it wasn't a huge problem. I sort of concocted one or two encounters that sort of slapped the wrist for knowing more than you should. And and we kind of moved on, you know, like he's like, okay, well, there's one potion here and there's one potion here. I'm going to take the green one because I know that's, you know, Kiyotama's magical ointment. And I'm like, he downs it. And I'm like, yeah, well, you take 20 damage because it turns out that's the light green potion of dissolving flesh that I just invented. So
exactly.
You can go that route with it. Like that's kind of how I handed it. And after like one or two times, he kind of knew, okay, let's just, you know, rein it in and stick with player knowledge. And it worked better. But, you know, like, honestly, like, this doesn't happen very often. Usually the players are more than happy to show up with a character sheet and a relatively fundamental knowledge of player rules and roll with that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, my experience especially is the person who is the most invested is in a world or system is usually the one who ends up being the game master.
Mm-hmm, yep.
You know, it's very rare that someone wants to be part of something and gets to have somebody else run it for them. You know what I mean?
Right. Which is why it would be kind of funny if we ended up doing this Conan campaign where, you know, like, you know more about the setting than I do. And obviously, if, you know, that kind of panned out that way, I think what I, aside from brushing up a little bit on the lore and figuring out a way to make my story kind of fit into the world, I wouldn't really worry too much about details. By removing the characters from anything that's an established, like a location that's an established lore, it would be a lot easier to start from scratch, and I wouldn't have to worry about, like, you know, missing the names of the nobles in this area or stuff like that. Just kind of remove the players from not the entire world, but enough of the setting that they're in new ground, even if they know the existing stuff.
That's true. That's a good approach.
Yeah, Steve, you're taken from my book. That's what I do in my D&D settings, in my D&D games.
Yeah.
I usually create my own kind of quote-unquote world, but it's like this kind of more generic setting to where, you know, they can still get into the stories and stuff, but they don't have to focus on the lore as much.
Yeah. Well, yeah. which is why I said Cursed Island when I was kind of like cooking up this thing. It was like, instantly I'm like, okay, let's do something new, something that isn't on the map. That's not necessarily removed from the entire world, but it's not going to be part of an existing kingdom or whatever. So if I make out, oh wait, no, turns out the king of this place is actually a really nice guy, not an evil, you know, whatever. I don't have to worry about stomping over background lore that I don't know. So,
The on the other hand, with that, however, what about the players who come to a game because they want to be in that world? So let's say you're playing in Middle Earth, and you know, I'm playing in Middle Earth. I really want to go to Minas Tirith. And you're like, you enter a portal and you're in a different dimension. So there's another, you know.
Well, okay. So yeah, IP games are definitely a different thing. Yeah, and Conan is an IP game. Definitely.
It is. But, I mean, there's still room. I mean, Star Trek is another example. You know, every planet you go to can be a different planet. So, you know, there's plenty of room to add some variety and stuff, but if you do that, if that's exclusively what you do, are you taking away from the players who want to be meeting those D&D NPCs or, you know, going to
Yeah.
You know, going to Eisen and meeting the Eisen firsts in 7C, or, you know, whatever game you're playing.
If I had it my way, every time, the person who knows the most about the setting is the GM. That's it. That, you know, if that was a perfect world, that would be the situation, but it's not.
I think I agree with you. And like I say, I think that's the majority of what I've experienced as a player.
But. Because I'm not going to put myself into a situation, most likely, you know, we do things on the podcast that's way out of my comfort zone in gaming.
Yeah.
All the time. But, you know, if I were getting a group together and playing a game, I'm not going to run a game that I lack so much information on with all this lore.
Yeah,
fair.
But, like, if I do select a game, you know, that everybody wants to play, I like to get a game that allows me to separate that lore from, you know, what we do at the table.
Yeah.
Well, so everybody can enjoy an experience, but not everybody's so bogged down in this lore.
Yeah. Well, let's flip the question here, though. What if you start playing a game, like, say, Mark, say you start playing Star Trek, and you find out the DM has no idea what the hell is going on with Star Trek.
Like, yes.
He's seen two episodes of TNG, and it's just a total mess from your perspective. How do you handle it? Do you try to correct him, or do you just sit on your hands and roll with it for the benefit of the group?
I think in...
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing. I think during the gameplay, you need to go with the flow. You need to just say, okay, this is the world that's being established for me. I need to role play in that world, because that's what we're doing.
Because no one likes a rules lawyer.
It's not so much, well, in this case, it's not so much the rules lawyer, but the setting lawyer.
Yeah.
A setting lawyer.
A lore.
And then maybe afterwards fiend. You say, listen, there's no lightsabers in Star Trek.
maybe afterwards you recommend a few episodes for him to go back and watch.
There you go, yeah.
But,
yeah,
exactly.
Like that.
But ultimately, the story is going to be from the Game Master anyway. So the Game Master says the way it is. So if the Game Master is saying Klingons are cuddly puppies, then okay, we're going to play with cuddly puppy Klingons this game.
And for the context of this game, then that's what they are. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I think that's important to remember, that the Game Master is the one telling the story, and you need to give them the opportunity to do that.
Yes.
You know, the other side of that coin is, you know, you got to play along, and maybe that'll turn out to be a special twist, in that you're going to find out that he's telling you something that's really wrong, and then it turns out to be a clue to the fact that you are in a mirror universe, and you know,
things need
to be rectified. So
that'd be cool.
Or maybe everyone's stuck in this same like mind control nightmare or whatever.
So don't be too quick to stomp on things. I think I've told this story before, but another example of this happened in our live action werewolf game.
Okay.
We were playing, and some guy came to investigate us and said that he was from the, you know, it was revealed he was from the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
CIA doesn't have any jurisdiction within the US. So I knew he could not be CIA. And so I spent the whole time absolutely convinced and telling everybody, don't worry about him. He's a fake. And we set up this whole thing based on the fact that he was a fake, because I knew more than the Game Master did. The Game Master didn't know that the CIA didn't operate. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that was a case of...
That's probably the closest thing to what this topic is talking about.
Probably.
So you're that guy.
Okay, that's one of my pet peeves in TV too, the whole CIA thing. Whenever they say I'm an FBI agent in France, I'm like, I'm out.
So, true.
Exactly.
Yeah. But you know, a little bit example of closer to home, the way we do 7C and the kind of the round robin, it's pretty much a given that we're not all going to have the same knowledge levels as we right. rotate around. And I think that's something that we deal with on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
Going, you know, kind of handing off the keys to the driver's seat.
And the when you see the car next, it's got a new paint job.
Yeah. And it's also on fire. Yeah.
Right, exactly. I do think that's something we're improving on, though, because we are talking a little bit more.
Yes.
About things in between. So, like, if you just GM'd one mark and I GM this next week, you know, I'll talk to you, I'll ask you some specifics, and, you know, maybe you'll tell me some stuff that you had a couple ideas on, and then we go from there and move on.
Sure.
So it's like just ideas start and then evolve completely by the time they're, you know, they're done.
Sure.
Well, and usually I think with all of us, we kind of try to keep things in scope when it comes to that. I think we might be getting off topic, but basically, we all kind of like, no, okay, this is my playground. Like, this is the stuff I'm trying to rectify. And this is what I need to leave open for hooks for the next guy. So,
Yeah. I think we're all good about, you know, kind of sitting out and shutting up when somebody else has the GM chair. But, you know, we can talk afterwards, and we can. You know, there's always that venue of getting together afterwards and sharing some ideas and comparing notes.
Right.
As much as it is a fun experience to play, it's a fun experience to go through this round robin GM situation and create this story together as, you know, all three of you are GMs at different times. It's a really cool thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's fun. Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
I think I personally enjoy it more than if it was one of us just running this entire campaign.
I agree. Mm-hmm. We each bring something so different to it that it really helps flesh it out quite a bit.
Right.
So, but I think we're talking a lot about knowledge and background knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
What about more specific prep? Is there, you know, what kind of prep would a player, and a lot of that could just be reading up on the background and knowing the histories and lore, but is there any other type of prep that a player would be overdoing?
Well, this you're talking about rules lawyering, right? Like, the player sits down and said, no, I've got this skill, and this skill, so I get a plus 18, and there's that. Like is that would be a kind of knowledge.
Yeah, this is more talking about like historical knowledge. So, yeah, the way this topic is coming from, they're playing in like a Victorian England, kind of setting.
Okay, so if they're like, no, that particular device wouldn't be invented for 100 years,
maybe.
Yeah,
something like so, like real historical facts that maybe the GM got wrong and a player is correcting them or going whatever, you know. I don't know if there's really a way to prep for that, because people's knowledges are going to be different vastly between person to person. And there's no real way you can, you know, become a true history buff over your player, between sessions.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, you got to do your best and maybe talk to that person, go, yeah, my knowledge isn't the best. Maybe we just go, hey, this is a parallel universe. We just kind of go with what's said and go from there.
Right.
Just so it doesn't stop the pace of our game, because, you know, that can just kill a game completely.
Yeah.
It's the kind of hand in hand with rules lawyers. These are basically the same kind of people.
History lawyers as opposed to rules lawyers. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, what about a situation where you can be flexible? You know, if your whole game is hinged on the fact that this item was there, play it was in the game out of date, but okay, I can flip it instead of a shotgun. It's a, you know, some other gun. It's a blunderbuss instead of a shotgun.
It's a blunderbuss.
You know?
Yeah.
Something like that. You know, okay. Something that's easy to change. How how much do you think it's you know, when is it appropriate for a game master to kind of bow to the player's knowledge?
Well, I think if it's an issue of moving things forward and making it more fun for everyone, like if it can be accommodated, or if the the story can be altered in such a way that it doesn't really change it dramatically, if it's just a matter of like, okay, fine, we're calling it something else now, then that's in the interest of moving forward and not getting distracted with it, sometimes it's not a bad idea. If it is a situation where it would completely change, you know, like the content of the story, you know, okay, they didn't have cars back in the 1400s, boy, you know, then you might need to do something different with it. But
yeah, I think it's, it again, this kind of goes back to the whole concept of everybody needs to be on the same page. So if this GM at the beginning of this, or even now, whenever this is happening, just sit down with your players and go, hey, guys, this is, you know, I am taking this from more of a loose general setting and going from there. And I don't really care about things being extremely accurate.
Okay.
If you want that, this might not be your table.
Yeah.
Because we're going to go from a more loose general, let's have fun, let's do what we want kind of situation, and see how that player reacts to that. Because this person is asking specifics of, oh, I want the, like, the specific time, year, month, region, whatever, so I can do my research for this. It's like, it's not about that, I think, is what this GM is saying.
Yeah, it depends on the makeup of the group. And if you've got a group of, you know, multiple players that are like that, then yeah, they're actually well suited to play with each other. If you've got that guy and three people who've never played an RPG before, then you might have to work something out. Like, it depends on group dynamics more than anything else as to what can fit and what is unreconcilable.
And at the end of this topic, this guy says, I just don't want to get well actually'd for the rest of the campaign.
that's a
you know, a very okay concern to have.
Because
as a GM, you don't want to get that every session several times for as long as this campaign goes on.
Yeah, that's legit.
You'll lose your enthusiasm for whatever game you're playing.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I think a lot of players kind of feel that way too. So that was a joke, because I said, well, actually. Anyway.
I like it.
Thank you. If you can reach just one person, that's all I need. Anyway. Yeah. But I was going to say, I also think that this is a really good reason for rotating game masters too.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that really helps, you know, if you have a player like that, it helps to put them in that center seat and let them deal with this kind of, you know, not that I advocating revenge, you know, don't go after that guy and, you know, I'll show you, but still it helps them appreciate both sides of that relationship.
Yeah.
But I think if that specific individual were to run a session, it would kind of be like sophomore history class.
Very possible. Very possible.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just
depending on how open they are to taking a more you know, general concept for this campaign. If they're okay with that, that's awesome. Just, you know, have them on the same page.
True. Mm-hmm. True.
I think. Oh, this next one's really interesting. Mark, you like this one too. I think everybody likes this.
I think so. And this kind of, actually interesting that I think this kind of a good merging point into this topic. And it's basically another Reddit article that basically says, I'm an accidental main character. And it's
Amen,
somebody
brother.
Who's yeah.
Amen, brother.
It's somebody who basically feels like they've become the main character of the party, and everybody else is kind of playing secondary characters. And before the show, we were talking about this, and Steve, I think, especially on our Tuesday night games, I think this happens to you a lot. I think we've on our games we kind of focus on changing the spotlight a little bit. So I think even though Mateo is a very out there character, it seems a little bit more balanced. But on a Tuesday night game, it seems like you tend to become the focus more often.
A lot of times, like, I feel like it's just down to party mix on that, because we've got one guy who doesn't do a lot of interaction, and another guy who does, you know, plenty. He does okay, but he also doesn't like to kind of step up and make decisions or take center stage a lot. And so, yeah, I feel like a lot of times, no matter what kind of my character concept is, I'll end up being the face of the party just because, you know, like, sometimes we need to, like, get stuff done and actually move forward.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, I'm saying, even when we play Star Wars and you and I are both players, my character tends to be kind of a quiet, brooding type, which, you know, again, kind of forces you to be the more open, you know, more out there one. But the character you're playing is an alien, which quite often doesn't fit that dynamic.
Yes.
As well as it probably should.
Right. You know,
it would be more appropriate.
And I've had to adjust that character quite a bit in our time, because it's not at all like the guy I initially rolled up. I was planning on being more of the background guy and kind of damaged and like low grade PTSD and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And instead, like, you know, I'm the one talking half the time.
Right.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think that's kind of natural for most parties.
Yeah, there is some character dynamic winning.
There's just a character that naturally stands out more than the others, and that's okay. And like, if you think of, you know, movies and stuff like that, that has, you know, an ensemble of characters, you'll notice some more or like some more than the others. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just kind of normal, I think.
I agree.
And next, the thing is, most likely, if this is you know, to this person whose post this is, if this is your situation and this is your group that you play with regularly, maybe next campaign you won't be that character. Maybe you'll be one of those characters that's in the background a little bit more, and somebody else will stand forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just basically, you know, a progression of the story and how it goes.
And I agree with you. I don't think this is a bad thing. I think the fact that somebody is keeping the party moving and keeping, you know, kind of pushing to make things happen is a necessity. You really kind of have to have that. We played Star Trek recently, and I haven't played that in a long time, because my gaming group kind of fell apart because no one wanted to be captain. I think a lot of times in a lot of groups, no one wants to be the main character. Nobody wants to be that leader type person. Because there is a lot of fun to playing a secondary character. That's a lot of, you know, you get to be a lot more flexible that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if everybody wants to be that, you know, usually someone will end up being kind of pushed into, because you have to have somebody.
Somebody has to step forward.
Right.
Well,
and I kind of think as a gamer, it's your duty to take that sheriff's badge when it's handed to you and don it for a little bit.
True.
Well, in my mind, I've got this sort of ideal, like, dispersion of characters in a game where everybody will kind of step up when it comes to be their time. So it's like, oh, we've got to break into a house. Well, thief, how do we do this? And the thief will lay everything out and do a plan and execute it. And everybody else will take second fiddle while the thief does his thing. And then suddenly, oh, God, we've been busted. Here comes the guards. Then the paladin will step up and, like, you know, ta-da, I've got this. This is combat. Yeah. You over there. You, ta-da, flow back, flanking, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Like, it would be great if that organically rotated through the party. I have never actually seen this happen. Like, this is just in my head sort of a platonic ideal. So,
well, I mean if you think about it, it's kind of happening with us, like in our round robin, because we're changing GMs. I mean, it's a little bit of a different situation. Like, we are changing that main character every other session.
Yeah, you know? But it's also not organic in the sense that when I'm writing stories for Nathaniel, and you know, like, I know the stuff that I'm putting down there, Nathaniel's going to be kind of the main, and
yeah,
like, so it's not organic. We've just kind of we've cooked that into the formula.
That's true.
Yeah, and a lot of times, kind of forced to be outside your comfort zone. We recently
By Mark a lot.
I mean, yeah, especially, yeah. But yeah, we recently had the episode where you guys had to kind of break in and do the stealth thing, stuff, which would normally be Nathaniel's cup of tea, thing. But
yeah,
you know, and he wasn't around,
right?
Yeah,
so. Yeah. So that is a case where you were kind of forced to do stuff, you know, differently. Yeah. So
and yeah,
you still had to step forward in different ways.
Yeah. And that was kind of the intent of the session was kind of like, okay, let's like everyone change pants. So,
yeah.
Yep.
You know, it was cool.
I mean, I think change hats would be a more acceptable phrase.
So why pants am I the only one without pants? Hello.
But yeah, and you know, the more you read into this topic here, this post, this person has had a lot of improv training, and they're used to kind of jumping into those situations, which is great. It's awesome, but not everybody has that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know,
we have it because we do this weekly, but I mean. But, you know, somebody who doesn't have all that improv training and or role play training,
exactly,
whatever the situation is.
Yeah.
You know, it's more difficult for them to step into a more, you know, it's more uncomfortable for them to step into, you know, more leader's role than the just being there and reacting to how the story goes.
Right.
And this kind of leads us back to a question, which I'm sure we've asked before, but I'm still looking for good example for practical reasons. How do you get someone to step up, a player who's, you know, a character?
Yeah, game, this is
to step up and be more involved and be more active in the game.
I was about to say, actually, I think one of the responsibilities, if you are that main character, is to kind of help the game master as well. In pushing things, if you're playing the captain of a starship, if we're playing Star Trek and you're playing the captain, you could very easily just make this a one-on-one game with everybody else sitting around, you know, watching you.
Okay.
It's up to that captain to say
to involve the other players.
Right. We need a medical solution. Who's playing the doctor? Okay, doctor. What can we do? Let's talk. Let's, you know, you come up with some ideas. Yeah. You know. You know, that lead character,
like, you have to delegate, I think, is the term that we're thinking of.
Well, not you just delegate, not just delegate, but just get them involved. Get them to just converse.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, delegate involvement. pull these people into the story with them as this main character.
Right, the game master is kind of delegating that to this main character player to some degree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because as the main character, it's very easy to kind of run over
solo
the other characters.
Yeah.
And I think,
just to focus on what the GM has kind of directed towards you and just focus on that.
Yeah, because it's easy for the game master too. Okay, I have this player who's engaged. I'm going to interact with them more.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So that's a very easy thing to fall into. So I think if you know, especially if the character in character tries to involve the other characters, that's part of that responsibility.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and if you're the GM and you're noticing this happening, you know, that one person's stepping up and everybody else is just kind of seeming uninterested.
Yeah.
You know, either, you know, talk with them and find out why they're uninterested, you know, or talk with your, you know, that player that is that main character and tell him to grab a couple people when he does stuff, you know?
Right. And I think if you can do that more proactively, you know, very specific. Hey, you go gather some firewood or do something, you know, fix the warp reactors or scan for cloaked ships, you know, do something, you know, giving direct, actionable, directions might be something to get them involved.
Ideally something that would tie into the strengths of the character. Like, you know,
of course
he's good at.
Of course.
Ask them a favor that they could help with that maybe would tie together with their strengths.
Right. Yes. Right. Right.
You know, something.
Or try to figure out some way to, like, even go out of your way if you have to figure out some way to use that skill in the plan, whatever the plan is.
Yes.
Yeah. To get them, you know, hands-on, head-first into whatever this next main objective is. Like, get them in there. So and they're used to being involved directly with the story plot that's going on, you know, whatever it may be.
Right, make sure they're included.
And that's something that, as a fellow player, you're going to be able to do better than the Game Master is going to be able to do. The Game Master isn't going to be able to give those kind of orders. Whereas if you're taking the role of a leader, it's easier to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, completely agreed.
Yeah.
Completely agreed. Yeah. I think this is a topic we can talk about forever. I think
it's a real fundamental part of the process of role playing. I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, completely agreed. Kind of going back on the whole, how can we get these other players more involved in the game if they're not? So let's take an example of, say, somebody that maybe isn't as experienced with role playing.
Yeah,
it's common
and very, very extremely common, and it's just maybe they're just solely reacting to what's happening. And they're not really, they're not rolling dice. They're not doing much game stuff. How can we get them more involved? Do you guys have any ideas?
Well, one thing to kind of bear in mind is just because somebody isn't talking or taking action doesn't mean that they're not making an emotional connection. They may be internalizing a lot of role playing and be experiencing things and thinking things. They're just not being proactive in doing stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense. It is true.
That makes complete sense.
So the first step is kind of differentiating between those two levels of involvement.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But then once you do, of course, then I think bringing people out of that shell is kind of a next important step too, because, I catch myself doing this, especially like I said, on our Star Wars game, I'm this kind of quiet brooding guy. So I'm like, I'm doing a lot of role playing in my head.
Yeah.
But that doesn't get out and that doesn't express to the other players. The other players can't interact with that. They can't bounce off that. So I have to kind of push myself to still be active, to still, get out there and maybe do some grumbling and complaining or do something,
do something verbal or visual to react, maybe in character.
Right, right. That's a fine character, but it has to be proactive. It has to be contributing visibly or audibly to the campaign.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. Steve, any ideas on that?
Well, yeah, I think it's basically, beyond what we've been talking about, include players that aren't as vocal as others might be. Go out of your way to kind of include them in the actions of the party if you're another player. And ideally, if you're a GM, have specific scenes in mind that are kind of tailor-made to their skill set. So, like, they almost have, I won't say no choice but to do something, but definitely have key points where this would be something that particular character would be good at. So,
Yeah. and maybe easing those things in slowly to get this person used to it instead of just straight throwing them this mission or quest or whatever it is,
right,
just solely directed towards that person. I don't think that's a good idea.
It's very easy to overwhelm those type of characters, those type of players too, so
yeah.
You want to be careful of that.
Walking on eggshells, some might say.
Dumping everything on at once or focusing the spotlight a little bit too intensely is definitely not a great idea. But
that's how you get deers in those headlights.
Which
I think so. Well, gentlemen, I think we have a solid episode here, so I think we might wrap it up here.
Sounds good.
Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. I had a blast, and I'm looking forward to the next one. And that's it for this episode of Tabletop Radio Hour. Like always, you can find this episode on soundcloud.com/tabletopradiohour and on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter @tabletopcast if you have any questions or comments. You can join us over on facebook.com/tabletopradiohour for regular updates. We also have an email address that is tabletopradiohour@gmail.com. Our website, tabletopradiohour.wordpress.com. You can find information about our Patreon page on our website. I want to thank you all for listening, and keep rolling 20s.